G'day team, welcome to the U Project for the, how many, do you want to say it, Melissa?
The 300th episode.
Ta-da! 300 episodes. I tell you what, who thought, I didn't think we'd get to 100, I didn't think we'd get to 50. And when we had today's guest on at episode one, we were probably aiming for a rock solid 10 or so, and here we are, 300 episodes later. And before we get underway, I just want to say thanks everyone, it's been amazing. We love your support, and we've grown from, I don't know, three listeners, one episode a week, three listeners a week, and we're heading towards 250,000 listens per month, which is ridiculous, which puts us up around, what does that put us up around, 3 million a year, which is absolutely crazy. And lots of good feedback. We're still learning and we're still fucking up and getting up and making mistakes and doing good stuff and not so good stuff, but we're having a crack and we really appreciate your support, and we really appreciate your interaction and your participation. And if you feel compelled to go and write a little, what are they called? A review. Anyway, today's guest was here 300 episodes ago. And one other time, I think. Is that correct, Melissa? This is number 3 for Berkey?
So episode 1, episode 40, and episode 99.
Okay, so number 4. So I've got no fucking idea. So for those three of you who don't know who Nathan is, I worked with Nathan 100 years ago at the Saints. He was a player. He was a great player. Played 323 games, three-time Best and Fairest Trevor Barker Award, 4 times All-Australian, St Kilda Team of the Century, St Kilda Hall of Fame. He's the current coach of the Western Bulldogs in the AFLW. He's old as fuck. He turned 50 this year. So while he's still alive, we thought we'd better get him on because who knows? G'day, mate.
Hello, Craig, and congratulations mainly to Melissa for putting up with you for 300 episodes. Melissa, that's a wonderful effort. I hope there's a raise coming for you sometime soon. But putting up with that crap. I've had lots of interview sort of introductions in my time, and yeah, that was another one. good work, Craig. Lovely to be here.
I'm constantly told by people that I'm nothing without Melissa, and I'm well aware, and I'm under no illusion that people come to listen to me and my bullshit. So I'm well aware of my limited value in this operation, but nonetheless, here we are for the 300th time. How have you been, son? Well, we haven't even spoken off air because we jumped straight in. So how have you been?
Yeah, I've been really good. Obviously, very, very different time, certainly for my industry, so that consulting industry. I was just telling Melissa that I've got a face-to-face job on Monday. It's been my first face-to-face job for about 4 months, which hopefully I remember what to do and it all goes well. But it's a resilience workshop down in Carrum Downs, so that'll be great. But apart from that, we've managed to get the Western Bulldogs girls up and running, albeit under some very tight COVID restrictions, as you can imagine. But we started that fortnight ago. So things are starting to come out the other end, which is good.
So what's that? So, of course, Nathan, as I said in the intro, Nathan's the coach of the Western Bulldogs, the girls. And so what is that? What's training look like? Where are you training? What kind of stuff are you doing? How do you navigate the 320 rules?
Yeah, it's tough. I must hand it to the players over the winter, because normally they would jump from AFLW into VFLW season. Obviously, that was scrapped. So we've had to engage them the whole winter, basically. And it's very hard to do a 3 month preseason. It's very tough to do a 9 month preseason, which is pretty much what we've asked them to do. So we've had to do a whole bunch of different things along the way. Between I run master classes 3 times a week at night, so the girls can jump in and just learn about the game. We've had leadership sessions. We've just trying to be engaging them, having one-on-one sessions. So going over all of their games last year using Zoom. So really engaging with the girls about getting better and getting them in the mindset of we can use this as a real positive, in that what does the ideal you as a player look like in terms of fitness, in terms of knowledge. We're stuck at home. Let's use this six-month period to build that ideal you and see what it is, and use all the resources of the Western Bulldogs, who are very, very good. We've had a skeleton staff of about seven people, whereas a lot of the other AFLW teams have just had nobody working. So we've maintained a staff. The girls can use us. And what I've seen the last 2 weeks is the girls have turned up for pre-season training. This is pre-pre-season. Pre-season doesn't start proper till November. In the best shape that they've ever been in their lives, raring to go. So that's what that looks like. Now, what does this look like? We've got to have three groups of 10, all different starting times. The three groups cannot go within 20 metres of each other. I, as a coach, cannot be 5 metres closer to the players. I'm not allowed to touch equipment. I'm not allowed to touch footballs. They kick a ball to me. I've just got to kick it back along the ground. They do 2 45-minute football sessions and then a weight sessions. They've got to have a shower, change clothes before they go. So it's very, very stringent. But the alternative is if we muck up, somebody gets ill, somebody gets sick, well, that's going to muck it up for everybody. So whilst they might seem a little bit over the top, they're a necessity at the moment. We're happy to comply if it means that we can actually get out there and train.
That's amazing. Well, I mean, the thing is, we don't, you know, right now where we are, we don't have any options. You know, like this is, that's, it's not like we can make it up as we go. All we can do is work around the parameters of what we've been assigned to work with. How have the girls been, you know, maintaining enthusiasm and focus and the head stuff and the emotional stuff? Because it must be, you know, like it is for everyone with all of us, whatever we're doing, whatever our role or focus or purpose, but it must be frustrating for them.
Yeah, it's incredibly frustrating. Everything down to, we've got some girls who come from interstate, from Tasmania, places like that. They can't get home. So they're pretty much stuck here. They haven't got their social networks of turning up and playing with the girls and being part of that connectedness. So they're stuck at home in their little flat, and it's been really, really tough for them. So I think the best thing that we can do is use Zoom, connect as much as we possibly can. That sort of social connectedness is really important, but also working on the two forms of connectedness. So one, the social, the relationships that they've got, and the other one is that task connectedness. So letting them know that they are part of something that we're working towards, which is obviously to be a very, very successful football team and win grand finals. Let them know that they're part of something bigger. They're just not out by themselves. So that task connectedness as well as the social connectedness has been really important.
And have you been, I mean, because, you know, like performance is performance and outcomes are outcomes and behavior is behavior and decisions are decisions and skill is skill. And I'm imagining a lot of your journey in corporate and your experience working in the corporate space. And obviously you took footy stuff into the corporate space, but you've also learned in the corporate space what works. Are you bringing any of that back in terms of management, decision-making, leadership? Are you bringing some of, because you took some of the sport into the corporate, are you bringing some of the corporate back into the sport?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, the end of the day, it's all people. So if you're selling widgets and that's your purpose and what you're doing, you've still got to get people to actually play the roles to make that occur. Same with football. We've got to get our people to play roles and work together to actually achieve an outcome. So when you've got people involved, they're very, very similar. How you go about it will be different. Footballers are very used to receiving feedback. They get it every single week. They get it every single training session, whereas a lot of businesses that I go into, it's almost a badge of honour with some people who say, I haven't had a performance review for 9 months. And I'll say, well, in my opinion, excuse the French, but you're an idiot. Why aren't you trying to get better? Why aren't you going to your boss and saying, hey, how can I get better? What can I do? Whereas football, every time I turn up for training, I'm getting girls coming up saying, how can I do this better? I want to do this better. I noticed I mucked up one kick on this last week. Can you teach me how to do it? all those sorts of things. So there's different nuances, but at the end of the day, they're people. And a big part of the people side of it is that psychological safety, we're terming it. And what I want is, so you've got your physical safety. We're working a lot on that at the moment, making sure people don't get COVID. The psychological safety that we're working on is making sure people can feel like they can be themselves without fear of negative consequences. Yep. Without somebody saying, that's not your job to speak up and say that. You haven't played 25 games yet, so you just hold your horses. We want them to be themselves. So I think in terms of a business and a sport, that psychological safety and growing that as a leader, that's it doesn't matter what industry sport you're in, that's vital these days especially.
It seems like now more than ever that coaches like yourself, you've got to wear a bunch of hats. It's not just all about football strategy and skill and execution and winning games. Of course, that's a lot of it. But it's also about understanding, as you said, they're people, whether or not we're selling widgets or whatever we're doing, cutting hair or playing footy, it's still humans doing human stuff. Do you feel like the role of the coach, especially in this time, has really expanded the job description? And I guess when you're on in an AFLW setting where the sport, from a female sense, is still growing and it's in its evolutionary kind of developmental stage, you feel like you've got to wear a bunch of hats?
Absolutely. I've got probably can't tell you how many hats that I've got. Everything from counsellor to psychologist to motivator to actually coach to tactician. So you've got to put all those on at different times. And what hat I wear is not determined by what I want to do. It's what the people need. So when I first got the job, probably 12 months ago now, I came in with a very much a tactician hat on, saying, hey, this is the type of football that we're going to play that is going to be successful in this competition, and we're going to be successful. After about 2 weeks, I figured out that they weren't ready for the tactician side of it. They needed the counsellor side of it. They needed the care side of it first to become confident enough to do the things that I was going to ask them. So we pretty much spent all of last year working on the players' confidence. Some of the older ones were saying, you know what, when's the tactical side going to come in? And I had to sort of placate them a bit and say, listen, we've got 8 18-year-olds that we just drafted. We've got 11 brand new players into the team. We've got a bunch of girls who for the last 3 years were in and out of the team on a weekly basis. They haven't got confidence. If they go out on the field thinking, am I standing in the right spot? Should I be 2 metres to the left or should I be 2 metres to the right? It's going to do their head in. I want them just going out there thinking, how can I get the footy? And we do that for 12 months. Now, this year, I'm going to put more of a tactician hat on because the counsellor side of it has worked okay. So I can put that hat on a little bit more. So what hat you choose is not the hat that you want to wear. It's the hat that your followers need.
And am I getting it right? Do you have 3 girls?
Yes.
And yeah. So every time you go into a conversation, you're also a dad of 3 girls who are ballpark in the same age.
Yep.
So you're you're a coach, but you're also a dad, and you've had however many years of conversations with young women, girls, teenagers, and now young women. So do you think that equips you in some ways better than had you, not been a dad?
Definitely. And growing up with 3 sisters as well.
Wow.
So you've got 3 sisters. Who do they have at the house when you're growing up? Their girlfriends. So friends surrounded by girls, 3 daughters. So all of my junior sport has been with females the whole way through. And to be quite honest, I'm more comfortable speaking one-on-one with a female and in that coaching role than a male. So I did the coaching with the Saints for 2 years. It wasn't where I wanted to go, but far more comfortable in the female space. A couple of reasons. Well, they make it easier for you because they're more likely to tell you what they don't know. where it's guys reluctant to tell you what you don't know, what they don't know, just in case you might judge them, you might hold it against them. Whereas the girls will come up and say, hey, you put me on the wing this week. I don't know how to play on the wing. Teach me how to do it. So you give them one or two tips, and then they come back at the end and they say, thanks, that was great. So in many ways, they make my job easy. But in other ways, you know, I think our record last year, we had five girls cry in the one night at training. And so one girl was injured, so she cried. I had to tell another two that they weren't playing, so she cried. One girl that I told was out of the team who cried originally, another girl got injured at training, so I then went back to her and said, no, you're back in the team. So then she cried. So we had five. I don't enjoy making people cry, but I enjoy actually picking up the pieces of that and using that as a coaching skill that I need to develop in order to handle that situation.
Well, at least when someone's crying, you know what's going on. There's no bullshit, right? Nobody's pretending to cry. Yep. Somebody might be pretending not to be upset, but when someone's crying, okay, all right, they're upset. This is real. At least you know what's going on and you can deal with it. And yeah, maybe that's why women are more evolved, because they're more okay to be vulnerable in that way. So when does the actual season kick off, all things being equal?
Yeah, early Feb. So first week of Feb we kicked off. So we're another three and a bit months from now. The AFL have done an enormous job getting the men's competition up and running. So I think we're probably going to follow a similar pattern of, we might have a rolling fixture of two or three games at a time, announced who's playing where and how much we can fly interstate, all that sort of stuff. So that's up in the air at the moment, but we can't control that. We have faith in the AFL that they've got the men's up and running and done, so they'll do the same for us.
And let's hope that there doesn't need to be some kind of, you know, single location bubble. Let's hope that you can fly interstate and not have to isolate and all that kind. I mean, 3 months down the track, you would think, I mean, but you don't want to think too much, do you? You kind of have to go, well, we didn't think we'd be here, but we are. But
yeah,
hopefully. But so you're back. When did you say you're back training, as in on the ground in real life with actual humans and footies, next week?
So we've done October twice a week, and then 4th of November we're allowed to do three times a week. But we don't know what conditions yet, depending on what's going on out in the community. But we might continue on this for a couple of weeks, and then we might be able to get 20 together, and then maybe get 30 together. So we'll just wait and see.
Now I'm going to ask you a few boring questions just because I'm interested. The listeners will be snoozing. But so do the girls have their own individual strength and conditioning programs that they execute?
Yes. So it's evolved a lot from the old days of, you know, when Harps, you were yelling at us, telling us what to do. Basically, everyone did pretty much the same thing. And nowadays, so they've all got their own individual strength and conditioning programs. They've all got their own individual development plans in terms of skill development as well. It's a bit very, very individualized at the moment.
It's a bit sciencey these days, mate. For me, it's a bit over my head. I'll just have to, you know, hang on. But, I mean, it's true. Like, you think about it, when you've got different ages, different playing abilities, different genetics, different injuries, different physiological requirements in terms of strength or speed or aerobic endurance or muscular, you know, it just makes sense that, you know, of course there's going to be generic group stuff that everybody's doing, but the fact that they've all got individualized, personalized programs built around their physical needs and abilities is, I mean, that's just makes sense. So it's good to see that happening. And you've got, is young Shanners still down there or did we sack him?
No, we sacked him. No, Shanners, unfortunately, it's terrible. He won't be with us next year. Just different circumstances. He's changing his job and he's going a bit of a tree change up the bush a few days a week. So, it didn't quite work out.
Good for him. I haven't spoken to him for a little while. So do you have, when you say you've got a team of seven, what does that look like? So there's a senior coach, you, what else, who else or what else comprises the team?
Yeah. So last year we had 30 players and a staff of 40. So Western Bulldogs are one of probably the club that really dedicates a significant budget to the female program. So I basically want for nothing. I've got no excuses. So I've got myself, three senior assistant coaches.
Wow.
I'd have a leadership coach. We have ex-Bulldog champion Robert Murphy coming in doing leadership as well. I have a, well, 3 days a week, it's a player development manager, two development coaches, strength and conditioning coach, psychologist, two physios, two doctors, and when you've got seven or eight trainers. Yeah, I don't want for any staff at all.
That's amazing, mate. That's a good team.
Yeah.
And so I just want to point out that Melissa is 181 centimetres and she's pretty handy, both sides of her body. She moves well. She's like a cat. You know, she's lithe. She's super bendy. Incredible power, speed, courageous.
Super kicks. Bendy is a good quality.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to. I mean, I just want to throw her into the mix for the draft.
Yeah. I was always super bendy. Did you find I was super bendy?
You're as bendy as a fucking cricket bat, you are. Speaking of you, you turned 50 this year.
Yeah.
How are you traveling? How's the body? How's the body and how's the energy? And have you hit any walls or are you just going all right?
No, going all right at the moment. I'm going to go for a jog after this. I've been up around the 8Ks, sort of getting 7 or 8Ks in a day. I opened my mouth when I first got the job and I said to the girls, I will never ask you to do something that I'm not prepared to do. And so that sounded really good at the start. It sounded like, hey, yeah, this guy's... Then reality kicks in. I've got to do the 2K time trials and I've got to do the running and stuff like that. So I really need to do it. But I put it out there that I was going to run a certain time at the 2Ks and I was going to lose a certain amount of weight. So once you actually put it out there, I need to lead by example. And so whilst it might be a bit of a pain in the backside, it's good for me.
So what do you have you done a 2K recently?
When was our last one we did? I was just under eight and a half.
I was going to say 8.5 would be my guess for you at this point in time. Because in your heyday, you would have been 7.5-ish.
Yeah, our fastest one's 7.5. Our slowest one's around about 9. So I thought if I can be sort of at least 30 seconds or so in front of the slow ones might sort of boost them along 5 or 10 trying to catch me.
So, well, those 50-year-old hamstrings would be loving every stride, wouldn't they?
Oh, yes. No, they're running around on the grass against the wind out there at Witten Oval. That's, you've got to make hay with the wind at your back. But I think it's good for me. And I think they appreciate it too. There's a lot of comments of, you know, it's good that you join in. It's good that you join in. So as long as they're still saying that, then I'll make the effort.
You know, we have a lot of conversations on this show. In fact, we had a lady on yesterday who... When's that episode up, Melissa? So this is Nathan is up next. So
this will be up Saturday. So tomorrow, that one will be up Sunday.
Okay. So we had a lady on who wrote a book called Bad Bosses. And essentially it's about, you know, leaders and bosses and what makes a good or a bad boss. But we have a lot of people who work in the corporate space, a lot of speakers and coaches who work around workplace culture and environment and communication and connection and leadership and all of that stuff. And you are in a similar place with your corporate stuff. How have you said you're going back on, is it next Monday or whenever you're doing your first face-to-face in a while?
Yep.
Have you had to really, as they say, pivot? Have you pivoted like a bloody champion? Have you done any of this? Have you done any Zoom gigs?
Yeah, pretty much everything's been on Zoom of late. Which is good. You can get a message across, but the thing that you lose is the eye contact, the questions, and you can't tell whether somebody is getting what you're saying. Do they need another example? Do they need extra sort of explanations. He basically, I've got content for 45 minutes to an hour. You get out the content and then ask questions at the end. So there's been a lot of that, which is, it pays the bills, but it's not satisfying by any stretch of imagination. So what I'm looking forward to on Monday is having that interaction and you know, putting the hard word on people who recognize, hey, yeah, I need to change, but I'm not really prepared to do anything about it. So I'm going to go, okay, well, I'm not moving on to the next topic until we actually overcome this hurdle. And you can't have those conversations via Zoom. So that's where the face-to-face stuff, certainly in my role, is far more pleasing.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's I've actually adapted. We've adapted because we had to, because of all our mentoring and our online stuff and or our normal open to the public workshops and seminars and events and camp and all of that stuff fell over, obviously. Yeah. So we had to adapt and we had to change the way that we did it. And I've really actually surprisingly, I've enjoyed it more than I thought I would hate it. I honestly thought I would hate it. And, you know, when the shit hit the fan and we had a lot of income for the year, virtually all of it fall over within a short period of time, as did many other businesses and services. And Melissa, who's been kicking me in the ass for about 5 years to start doing online things, said, all right, Dumbo, let's do an online mentoring program, because I run constant mentoring programs, but they're also always face-to-face up in my space in Moorabbin, which is good and bad. The good is I've got a room full of humans and we can do 30 people at a time in this mentoring context versus one-on-one, which is not as, you know, from a business point of view, not as good. But then all of a sudden, so Melissa's like, let's try an online thing. And I went, oh, you know, okay. And she's like, just the same content. You know, was the first one 4 weeks or 6 weeks?
I think we did 6 weeks in the beginning. No, we did four, but two sessions a week.
That's right. That's right. So we did, that's right. And we, but anyway, so we didn't even advertise, as in spend money advertising. We just promoted it through social media. And I'm thinking, Berkey, you know, well, we'll get, I don't know. I thought, I didn't know if we'd get 10 people or 50 people. I definitely didn't think we'd get 100 people. And for the first one, we, and they've only grown bigger since then. The first one, we had 255.
Right.
Book in for mentoring. Yep. And I'm like, what's this about? And I, of course, this is a no-brainer and it's obvious. But all of a sudden, anyone anywhere in the world, literally anywhere in the world, who wants to attend, in inverted commas, can come.
Yep.
But when I'm running one in bloody Moorabbin off Warrigal Road, you got to live within probably 30 minutes of there to make it viable.
Yep.
Well, that's not 99% of my followers. So the last one we did, the last level one we did, we had, was it 330, Melissa?
Something like that, yeah.
And it's, you go, oh, okay. So there's this, and it's, I don't think the experience is as good, but it's pretty good. And from a business model, you go, and it's not all about that, of course, because I much prefer being in a room. I'm like you. I like to see faces and physiology and reactions, and I like to feel energy, and I like to be in the moment and point to a bloke or a girl and go, what do you think of this? And you have a real-time interaction. Well, you can't do that via Zoom unless there's only three of you on the call like right now. But I've been surprisingly pleased with how it's gone. And it's been, so I reckon moving forward, well, not I reckon, definitely moving forward, we're going to do a mix. We're going to do a mix. So I'm still want to do all my face-to-face and I still want to do my corporate, but you know, like I'm doing gigs all over Australia at the moment. And the funny thing is, as you know, you know, if you've got a 1 PM speaking gig, you could be downstairs in your jocks getting a cup of tea at 5 to 1, you know. Rock up, put on your black t-shirt or your business shirt or whatever your preferred presenting attire is. Yep. Sit down, hit the link and go, boom, here we are. Chatty chat for an hour and then jump off and go and eat a fucking chicken sandwich.
Yep.
And you haven't had to drive anywhere. You haven't had to fly anywhere. You didn't have to find a park. Yep. I think there's a bit of upside in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're learning that through the Western Bulldogs as well, in terms of so after each game, the players normally sit down with their line coach and for 20 minutes or so go through all of their individual edits and interactions in the game and what they did well, what they didn't do well. There's no need next year to drag them all into Witten Oval to be able to do that. So I can say, okay, Sunday afternoon, Monday morning, Monday lunchtime, I'm free. Here's some 20-minute slots. If you're free at work, well, let's jump on the computer and do it. So I've been doing those all winter. They're just as effective as sitting next to the person. Mm. So we need to keep evolving like that, certainly in a football sense. But, yeah, there's a lot of companies that I'm talking to at the moment that are still getting their head around what that new possibility, because what we've learned is that there are some better ways of doing things. And all those companies are out there sitting there going, oh, I can't wait to get back to the way we used to do things. Can't wait to get back to that. Well, you know what? That's not going to cut it anymore.
I was talking to one of my mates who owns a business the other day, and he goes and sees his accountant monthly. And he said, it takes me 45 minutes to get there. We spend 30 minutes together and it takes me 45 minutes. He goes, it's rock bottom, a 2-hour round trip.
Yep.
He goes, I've been meeting him every 4 weeks for 30 minutes on Zoom. He goes, I'm never driving there again. He goes, there's no upside. Like, I don't need to, because we get exactly the same stuff done. And yep. I don't need to sit in his office to see his face or have this conversation.
Yeah. And there's a lot of telehealth providers as well. So my old man goes to the doctors, doesn't really get a physical checkup. It's pretty much, how you going? How's the medication going? All good. Why would I drive all the way there to just have that conversation? So do it over something like this. So the companies that are looking at how we can take what we're doing now further, well, they're the ones that are going to thrive. The ones who are waiting to get back to the way that we always have done things. And we're in exactly the same mindset at the Western Bulldogs. How can we use what we've learned over this period to actually make us better moving forward?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's going to be a combination. Hey, Melissa, how does my microphone sound?
It sounds great.
Everybody, we're a bit excited today because we've got new mics. Oh, my God. I think we may have. I don't want to get too ahead of me. I'm touching wood, but we might have solved our bloody audio problems. I think you're right, Berkey. I think there's going to be a little bit of an amalgamation of the old and the new moving forward, or the virtual and the real life moving forward, which might for some businesses and service and products make life easier and even more profitable, I think, you know, because like for me to do a gig to a team in Sydney where I literally, it's an hour out of my day versus a whole day, an hour out of my day minus the air travel or the minus the planes, trains, automobiles and whatever. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense practically and also for the company economically. They can pay less, I can charge less, but it's still not a bad day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had one job recently. It's a global company, but it's the Australian arm of that. 120 employees all working from home. Hmm. So they wanted me to speak with every single one of the employees, just see how they're going, see whether the company can do anything for them, just talk through some issues. And I think 95% of them actually have said, you know what, I'm actually okay now. I'm not too bad. I'm not rushing back to the office. I'd like to go back at certain times, but certainly won't be 5 days. It'll be a bit more of a hybrid solution, maybe 3 at home, 2 in the office or 2 and 3. And once they've overcome, the biggest hurdle that they faced was a mental one. And I can only describe it as a sense of guilt in that they had a whole bunch of work to do. 24/7, they're near their computer. So basically they're in the office. It's like being in the office. And when they move away from their computer, go talk to their family or go outside and get their hour worth of sunshine or something, it was always, there's more work to be done and I'm near my computer. So when I'm not doing it, I feel guilty. I should get back and do it, need to get back and do it. So I think if companies really spend some time sorting through those sort of mental issues of working at home, get people set up correctly, because there were still some people sitting at the kitchen desk on a stool, bent over with a sore back. I think it can be really, really productive actually working from home. And that doesn't mean that you use the time that you would normally travel to work as working time. That's not what I mean by working longer. It's how can I make that period when I'm working from home really, really productive? And there's ways to do it, and the good companies will get it right.
I think you make a really good point, you make a lot of good points there, but I think it's important that there's a real separation between work time and non-work time. And I reckon where you have your workstation based matters a lot.
Yep.
Because if it's kind of where you live and also work, it's in the same room.
Yep.
You know, I think there needs to be a separation and a distinction, so you can not just switch it on and off practically, but emotionally and mentally go, well, this is the room where I work. This is the room where I watch Netflix and fucking hang out. Like, we don't want that to be the same room.
Yeah. And we're trying to give them tactics of, okay, if you can't do that, if you're in the same room, well, close your computer and put it in a cupboard, so that if you just want to check an email, it's a bit of a pain in the ass to actually go get it out of the cupboard, open it up and wait for it to start up and log in and all that sort of stuff. Mm. Make it hard. Or go and change your clothes. So you're sitting here in, you know, work clothes. When I've done for the day, it's those clothes are off, the trackies on, the slippers are on, whatever it may be. Have that mental, physical separation from your work and when you're not working. And that will help you take away the guilt of, oh, I should be there working. I should be there doing some extra, because there's always work to be done. You're never going to finish it completely. So there are companies who, as I said before, if they really pay attention to that sort of stuff, who knows? Do you need all the office space that you're paying a crap load for in the city? Can you cut that by half just by spending some more time getting this side of it working? And I think it's in many ways, it's a bit of another industrial revolution. We're learning new ways of actually working that could be the complete change from what we've done in the past.
And pursuant to Nathan's comment just there, if anybody wants a 30-seat lecture theatre in Moorabbin that's fully furnished, that's very well equipped, that's ready to go with a 50-inch TV screen and two big lovely glass whiteboards, 30 chairs, some lovely lounges, just email Melissa, because we can help you out. That online bullshit, it's not going to take off. But if you want a bricks and mortar lecture theatre, just hit us up. Are you back to what you said before, where you did some stuff with 120 people? Are you saying you had individual meetings with all of those people?
Yeah, there was at least 20 minutes with every single one of them. So it was a little bit of Groundhog Day. When you get about 10 of them, 20 of them sort of in a row, it's the same questions over and over again. But it was fascinating just talking to people, just in their different situations. And whilst there were some real common themes that came through, everybody was in a slightly different situation. There was ones who were homeschooling at the time. Mm. So they were finding it really, really tough. And so just to be able to offer some solutions and say, okay, well, how about you go back to work and say, can I shift my working hours? Instead of starting at 9 to 5, can I go from 11 to 6 and the first 2 hours of the day, I'll just do homeschool? So I that's my focus. And when that's done, then I'll do this. So coming up with solutions, and you know, people at the end of it, a lot of them are very obvious and they go, oh, I was thinking that, but I didn't know whether I should ask. And helping people out was rewarding for me. As well, to be able to offer people solutions to some of the issues that they were going through. So, yeah, I had a great time. As I said, it was a bit Groundhog Day-ish, but it was a great, great project in the end.
And I think what's really good for people is to be able to have the opportunity to talk to someone who's external. Like, this is not a friend or family member. This is not somebody that's got an emotional connection. This is somebody who's just coming to the table and hearing about my situation with a fresh brain, fresh ideas, and a unique perspective, and then say, well, you know, I mean, I think that's invaluable. Were there any, was there any one common reoccurring conversation or theme or message that surprised you or that just kept presenting itself?
No, that probably the biggest working issue for people were probably two things. One, the inability to have those ad hoc conversations where you just walk past somebody and ask a question and say, what do you think about this? Or who's that person? That was where people were really struggling, those communication points. The other one was, we spoke a lot about before about using Zoom for meetings and things like that. What I found was that a person who I would describe more on the introverted side really struggle with those. Because what an introvert would normally do is they're sitting in a meeting, they've got something to say, they'll look around the room and they'll look at, okay, who else is just about to say something? So if they're about to say something, because I can tell, I'll wait. Or I'll wait until I see no one else is going to say anything and then I'll chime in. And you get a better understanding of when the topic has moved on. On Zoom, you can't do any of that. And so what we found was that they weren't enjoying that experience because they took away all those personal triggers for them to actually say something. So what we did then, we discovered that. So we went back and we said, okay, leaders, here's a different way of actually managing your Zoom meetings. Before you go onto a new target, identify who are the more introverted people in your group. And before you move on, say, Craig, you got anything to add, mate? All good? And they say, no, I'm fine. Move on. And just engaging people in different ways. So there's a lot of those little learnings that came through that made it easier. But yeah, that Zoom interaction and also the ability to have those ad hoc conversations. And a lot of other companies, they really didn't quite get the balance right between email, phone calls, and Zoom. So the newer generation, they're more than happy to fire off a text to someone and just wait for an answer. Whereas sort of our generation, we're more likely to pick up the phone and say, hey, what's the answer to this? Mm. So really revisiting what is the best form of communication for the type of questions and the way that you want to communicate and reinforcing that. So teaching the young ones that it's okay to actually pick up the phone for a 30-second phone call and ask a question. It doesn't have to be a text and I'll just sit back and wait for an answer and you lose all your productivity.
Are you saying we can actually teach the youngie something? Is that what you're saying?
I think we can. Yeah, they can teach us something as well. But yeah, both ways. I think we can learn off each other, and there's a middle ground that actually is the right way to go.
I wonder what's going to happen in 2021. I'm really interested to see what might unfold in sport, in business, in the AFLW, in the AFL. I wonder what conversation we'll be having in a year. I wonder if, I don't really have a question here, I'm just thinking out loud, but I'm just wondering if we're going to have a vaccine within the next 12 months. I wonder if we're going to be back to a version of normal. It's so interesting right now because it's very hard to plan because so much is, you know, life's uncertain anyway, but then you chuck a global pandemic and you go, well, yeah. there's something new, yeah. You know, like it must be hard for you to plan. You know, everything has to kind of be contingent on four things happening or not happening. And so you've got a plan, but then we've got a plan B, C and D.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got the ideal scenario of what things look like. Having said that, the ideal scenario is what I was talking about before, using Zoom for meetings. So we've learnt that. That'll be better. But the same token, I'm on a two-week rolling schedule at the moment. So I plan for the next 2 weeks. And if they change, quite likely they will then I'll plan for another 2 weeks. So being flexible and agile is going to be super, super important. The other thing, though, is the inability to be flexible with the players at the moment is actually a godsend for us. Because last year what I found was that even though we trained the night before, the girls will all turn up the next night and it's like they haven't seen each other for a month. They want to catch up and hug each other and chat and laugh and sing and carry on. Trying to get them to actually, you know, go from, okay, you need to do this before training, you need to do this, you need to do this, a bit more clockwork because we're very limited with the amount of time we get with the players. That was a bit of a struggle. What we've got at the moment is they're forced to actually turn up. You've got 5 minutes to get changed. You've got 5 minutes to get ankles done. You've got 10 minutes out to do this. That's teaching them how we need to train once these regulations have all gone. So if you look at it, there might be some things that might be a bit of a pain in the ass at the moment, but you know what? They're what we need moving forward. We won't be as stringent, but certainly we won't go back to what we were previously. So I think if you can really look around, there's always stuff that no matter what you're doing that you can learn from.
I think you're right, and there's what it does, it makes you, well, you're either going to sink or swim, but if you choose to swim, you're going to develop new skills, new awareness. I've developed new skills. You may or may not remember, but I started a PhD in November and literally 3 months in, I had to stop going to uni every day, which was kind of, that's what worked for me.
Yeah.
And I've had to do at, you know, 57, do all this self-directed, I've got no idea what I'm doing, but it's a very steep learning curve. So you go, all right, well, I guess I'm doing this at home and I guess I'm having meetings via Zoom with my supervisors and I guess I can't just walk over there and ask those people those questions I used to ask them. And, you know, it just is what it is. But I think even though the quality of the results will vary, sometimes better, sometimes worse, the thing is that what's happening for all of us is just through circumstance is that we've had to become more resilient and more adaptable, like, because there's no option.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I guess we could capitulate, but you know, if you're going to play footy next season or you're going to coach a team next season and they're going to compete at the highest level for their sport in, you know, then you go, well, we can't change the pandemic, so we need to change our operating system around the pandemic.
Yep. Absolutely. It's that we talk about the concept of sitting still. Even down to we challenge the girls to answer the question of I'm a person who, and what's on the end of that?
And I like that. Yeah. I like that. Yeah, that's a good idea. I like that. And what do they come up with?
Yeah, so they've got to tag something on the end of it. And so I'll use my daughters as an example. So at the start of this pandemic, I said, okay, let's answer that question. I'm a person who. And one of them said, I want to be a person who speaks more than one language. She's travelled a fair bit. She's, you know, she loves Spain. That was her favourite spot. Said, okay, next time you go back to Spain, what would you like to do? I'd like to be able to speak Spanish better than what I can. So I said, what are you going to do? So there's an app called Duolingo, I think it's called. And every day she sits there and learns Spanish. So I'm a person who speaks another language. Another one had piano lessons when she was younger and said, oh, yeah, I want to reconnect with her. I want to be a person who plays an instrument. So she's re-engaged with that. So I've got the same thing with a lot of the players, and they're now working on, I'm a person who, I did this with one guy once, and he said, I want to be a person who reads, so knowledgeable. But then he went on to whinge and complain about the price of books, and I had to point out that there was a place where you can get all the books you want for free. It's called a library. How good's that? So people will come up with a lot of excuses why they're not that person. But when you dig into it, you can overcome those excuses exactly. So do that exercise. I guarantee you they'll start to think, yeah, but I. But no. If it's important to you, importance will dictate effort. And you'll build that person who you are. And it doesn't matter whether we're in a pandemic or not in a pandemic. I think that is a really good question to continually ask yourself.
So we've got to wind up, and thank you a lot. Thank you so much for your time. But I just wanted to ask you, so there are people that, you know, in sport, in business, in life, in relationships, in, you know, financially, like we're all, it's all new. We're all adapting. We're all navigating this new normal, blah, blah, blah. What do you think, my last question, what do you think kind of makes the difference? Are there any standout qualities or skills or attributes or behaviors that mean that people are more, irrespective of talent level or situation, but just certain, like I said, attributes or qualities that seem to be present with people who adapt better or cope better?
Yeah, so I do a fair bit of work and sneak it in whenever I can. Just talking about attitude being a combination of your thoughts, feelings, and actions. So the way you think, feel, and act. And in my book, that is the most powerful thing. The ability to choose how you think, feel, and act, it's the most powerful thing that we own. Because if I said to you, Craig, for the rest of the day, or Melissa, you have to feel this way, you have to act this way, and you have to think this way, you'll tell me to get stuff. You'll say, you can't tell me how to think and how to act. Yet we give that power to things outside of our control all the time. Mm. It might be the weather. You look at the thing, oh, it's going to be 13 on Monday. Monday's going to be a crappy day. You're letting something outside of your control actually affect the most powerful thing that you own, which is the ability to choose the way you think, feel, and act. So I firmly believe that successful people, vast majority, 99% of them, have mastered that. They choose how they think, feel, and act. They don't let outside circumstances choose it for them. So, I think whether things are shit's hitting the fan or things are going great, you've still got to choose how you think, feel, and act. Take ownership over that.
I love it. Nice way to end, mate. If people want you to, if they want to pay you a fortune to come and work with their organisation, if they've got a limitless fucking pit of money and they want the best.
Mate, I'll do anything for free. You know what I mean?
No, you don't. He definitely doesn't do it for free. But he's very reasonably priced. I will say he's good value. He's good bang for your buck. How do people contact you?
Probably just through the website, the easiest, NathanBurkeConsulting.com. Very inspiring name, that one. Couldn't come up with anything better.
Fucking hell. Did you have a teamwork on that? You boring fuck or what? Oh, hang on. Did you have a whole lot of consultants around the table drinking Coronas and eating popcorn coming up with that?
Cost me a fortune, they did. Or just jump on a LinkedIn, Facebook. You'll be able to find me. Nathan Burke Consulting. That's the easiest.
Mate, stay on the call and we'll chat when we finish. We appreciate you. Thank you so much, Melissa. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Nathan. That was great.